Italian Wine Podcast. Cin Cin with Italian Wine People.
Hello, this is the Italian Wine Podcast. My name is Monty Warden. My guest today is Michele Manelli from the Salchetto Winery, which is in the Nobile or Vino Nobile region of Tuscany. Welcome, Michele.
Hello, thank you for having me here.
Now, listen, tell me a little bit about, first of all, about the region, Vino Nobile di Montepulciano, obviously the town of Montepulciano. Where is it in Tuscany exactly, and what makes it special?
Well, we are in the southeast of Siena province, quite internal, so get less influence, first of all, from the sea.
So how far were you from the Mediterranean in kilometers, or 50 kilometers?
Actually, bird flight, probably something like this, okay. 50, 60 kilometers. Okay.
So you get nice, cool winters?
Yeah, we get, especially, you know, at the end, we notice that we have bigger excursions.
Bigger day-night temperature differences.
At the end, we can get a little warmer during summer, but even colder during winter. But what really makes a difference is this exchange, because actually we can define ourselves compared, for example, from our cousins of Montalcino, which are the closest, probably the closer appellation from us, more continental. We definitely are a little bit more continental. And this exchanges help, by the way, a lot. It's one of the factors that is helping a lot these great maturations and capacity of extracting. It's Montepulciano seems to be really a goddamn area for Sangiovese, which is sometimes
the main grape, also known as Prugnolo in your area. So this idea of you get much colder winter than Montalcino, is that good for dormancy, letting the vines really get a good sleep?
That's a point that we see, even though, let's be clear, the stress has been very high in the last decade for everyone around, let's say, Italy, Europe, the world.
The universe.
The universe, maybe, for climatic, because I'm sure they plant vine even in the universe, and actually it's everywhere. And it's so we do have stress coming from this variability of the weather, which is a phenomenon, as we know.
So the main grape is Sangiovese. Vino Nobile can be made, it can be a blend. It doesn't have to be 100% Sangiovese, does it? It could be a blend of up to 15%.
It can, actually, it has always been. It was born as a blend. The up to 100% Sangiovese came in the 90s. It was quite late, but it started with a 60% in the 60s, one of the first appellations around, and then the recent and stable, I would say, regulation in this interpretation of the percentage of Sangiovese is minimum 70.
So what do we expect in general terms from a Vino Nobile wine in general, and also from a Salchetto wine in particular? What do you look for as a winemaker and as a vineyard?
Well, what I look for is to express Sangiovese, it's bright red fruit. It's the fact that he has no terpenic, so no dominating aroma, is something that I appreciate in the sense of a variety of fruit.
So when you say terpenic, what do you mean? You're avoiding what, stalky flavors or
vegetable flavors?
No,
generally, you know, terpenic is when you have a molecule that is going to provide a taste very profiling a grape. For example, the cat piece of the Sauvignon Blanc, okay, or the wet herbaceous of the Cabernet Sauvignon. Exactly, these are elements that are giving a predominant character, or you know, well, when Sangiovese is not. So Sangiovese has the variety coming out from his the fruit of small red fruit, for example. And then the second aspect is I will look more for elegance than power. If we can, let's say today we can give this kind of so a medium body experience, then I will try to look for length in the, so give a complexity more in the length than in the largeness.
So length, yeah. So give it a nice long aftertaste.
Exactly. And then I would like to close. I dream of my Sangiovese closing soft. The tannin giving a soft experience, because then this is today I think the ABC of winemaking. We have to create wines that are clean and balanced, stable, harmonious, and softer.
And have that drinkability. Yeah.
And exactly, which helps about drinkability. Then on the territory, because you asked myself, but on the territory, I think that we are finally moving in a similar common direction. Of course, you can't have everybody doing the same stuff. It's impossible. It will be annoying, probably too. But we definitely see Montepulciano looking for these two to come to take out from this terroir, which has the opportunity to give you all that I said, so elegance because of you know, the medium body, but also because we have a nice acidities, you know, Montepulciano with its clays and is more continental, gets mature with a better acidity than others, for example. So in general, and I see winemakers are looking in this direction.
But also what I like about the region as a whole is you've been very open to having experts come and analyze your soil and do soil maps and help wine growers really understand what is underground so that they can then make better choices in terms of pruning or plowing and picking and that kind of thing. Well, are you a good squad, a good group, a good team?
I think that, part of it, we talk a lot between each other too, which we, not only the group that we made, the alliance is of course, is an even further very tight group of fellows, but winemakers, but also in general, I see our technicians between each other. We see our, you know, the farming guy that get together every 2-3 months with the other farming guys of a few wineries, a group of talks, you know, really, and this is good. I try to promote this a lot, but in general, what I would say is that Montepulciano is, even though it has the greatest wine history you can imagine in Tuscany, together with some few wineries,
yes,
few estates in Chianti Classico.
400-500 years of history.
And we've always been the wine appellation in the Renaissance, late Renaissance. So among the Italian wine scene, so the first to start making real quality. But we have to remember that we disappeared after the war. We were too poor. We didn't have this investment yet in the early times that had some other areas. So basically, since we are today the last trying to reborn in some way with this great.
When you say the last, you mean a lot sort of less well known than Chianti Classico and less well known than Brunello.
So we have to move more.
Yeah, but in a way, you've got an advantage because you can see the mistakes the other guys have made and the other teams have made.
Makes sense.
In terms of making life too complicated for consumers to understand. So I want to ask you about your winery. I know you're organic in your vineyards. How big is the estate, roughly, in terms of vineyard area?
Today, we went over the 50 hectares, so we are close to the 60 almost, with some new vineyards that are coming along.
Okay, and everything handpicked?
Yes, of course. I tried, I must be honest, I tried some in the previous years to rent a machine for a day or two, just to see what was this thing that, and I can say that there is certainly a great opportunity to make a mass large, let's say medium quality become better. Okay. Also in terms of productivity, I do believe this. It's complicated to use, but I say that there is no, it's not possible for the high quality to do anything else than hand picking.
Okay, tell me about the winery. You've got the first, as far as I know, the only off-grid winery in Italy. And I'm not going to wax lyrical about it. I want you to tell me, but I think you've got the most exciting winery in the whole of the country.
Wow, thank
you.
No,
seriously, every time I go there, it's just this natural light. Just give us a rough idea of how it works, what the key drivers were behind it in your mind, and why did you design it the way you did?
Well, the answer is because when I wanted to grow the winery, I wanted to make the most responsible choice of development I could. So I needed, first of all, to defeat energy, because it has always been in the last decades a great challenge, because energy is a scarce resource and a strategic one, but also because of these climate changing effects. So we need to be responsible in this sense. So I designed the winery to be energy independent with a lot of solutions that are savings, a conveyor of light instead of electrical lights, or just mirrors, or free cooling by collecting air from outside, or having a design inside the project already since the beginnings, rooms and spaces to work my own biomass, wood biomass, to make them become energy, etc., etc., a lot of things. And this was the idea. Then, this responsibility, first of all, we came at a point, we say we need to enlarge the vision. It cannot be only energy. We have to see what are the main impact of winemaking. Well, we have to talk about also biodiversity management, water management, but also what was really important, we got inside an approach to measuring our standards of sustainability, because then it became an even broader picture. Being responsible of all my value chain, from the supply upstream until the distribution downstream. So interacting with my value chain to measure all the impacts, the major impacts, and try to monitor and get them better. For example, the packaging. Packaging is not something I produce, but I use it. So I need to find, for example, as we do, the best lighter bottle or produce locally because it's better for the upstream process and downstream process. And it decreases my carbon footprint of myself because I am responsible of it. And to conclude, by the way, I'm very proud that I've been one of those who has promoted the birth of a great sustainability standard. We have today, and by the way, tomorrow at Vinitaly, we will be having the first certificate with 10 other colleagues. This is great. It's named Equalitas, and it's really something that all the world now is inviting Italy for this standard, because the Californians have done great things in the past, but now they need to catch up, and they are already, for example, looking at our standard, the Spanish, the French. I say it not with vanity, but with pride, because Italy has done great investments in the last decade in terms of sustainability. We are not the only one. There are a lot of people that have been on all sides, production, research of university, associations of growers. I'm really happy.
So when I go into the winery, these lovely lights come on. Are you just having like low energy light bulbs and an electric source for those? How does that work?
Well, it works that first of all, we have to work when there is sun, which is a good thing. When there is no sun, we have to go home doing better activities.
Why?
Because there is no electricity.
So no electricity at all?
At all, no.
So hang on, what the light is from the sun? When I walk around, the light
light is reflected by mirrors. There are pipes that are collecting really the I can say physically, you know, these sun rays that bounce in these mirrors and get to even 20 meters distance, making turns and doing and going into the room where we need it. By the way, when you are inside, you've been at the winery, remember?
You can see the
clouds outside that create a shallow even inside an underground cellar.
If anybody hasn't been there, it's like being outside, but you're completely inside, and as you say, you're underground. So you're talking to somebody who's in bright light, and then it just gets a little bit cloudy and a bit shady, and then the sun comes out again, and you are, I don't know how many meters underground, 10, 15 meters, whatever
You're 18 meters, actually.
Right, there you go. And it's absolutely, if I had to work in that winery without these horrible buzzing, electrically charged lights, which really give you a headache, you just feel so natural in there. Horrible word to use. Right, I'm going to ask you another one. So basically, in terms of energy, what about water reclamation? Because obviously we use a lot of water.
Yeah, we use a lot of water.
In winemaking.
Even though we have to remember that this lot of water mainly is rainwater falling over our vineyards.
So you collect it?
When we measure water impact, we also consider the responsibility of the piece of land that we manage, or the rain that falls on top of it in some way, because we are using it impartially to cultivate grapes. And by the way, it's typically a rational way to use this rainwater. We collect it, of course. We have a lake because we collect even rainwater. But mainly our care is, and this is what is the really strategic impact in winemaking, is treating the water you touch, let's say, so the water that goes through the cellar, the office, the restaurant in the winery or whatever, and so we need to really be sure to clean it and not to give it back to the environment worse than we took it, because otherwise there is a big impact on biodiversity.
So when you're making red wine, you need to use pumps to pump the juice over the skins. You just have you just plug into the electricity socket like everybody else, or would you do something?
Not really.
Go on, spit it out. Let's hear about it. Come on.
No, we have, okay, for electricity pure, we have some photovoltaic. We need it. Because
so that's solar energy that you're catching.
Solar energy, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Because also you've got another system where you use the carbon dioxide. Is that correct?
Actually, this is the. I'm sorry. This is during the winemaking.
It's
even more fun. You're right.
Yeah, go on.
You know it better than me.
No, you can explain it.
During fermentation. By the way, this system was born because I met with these guys that manufacture steel vats up in Venice, the Lazzi brothers, crazy people that wanted to create a fermenter playing with pressure. And so it's kind of, you know, the German project that then gave birth to Ganymede. But it's much more interesting because it's complete, because you're playing with this pressure and you're doing all the movements. So the pump over, no more pump over, because you play with pressure by creating it and depressurizing the vat, you can get a movement of the juice, which will be not only a renewable energy, because we have created the renewable energy thanks to this playing with the pressure generated by the fermentation, but we are also doing it in an extremely delicate way. So basically we created at the same time a super efficient tool in terms of energy management, but we also created a fantastic tool to make better wines, because the extractions are softer, so you can extract more and have wines which feel more round, and this is great.
So basically when the yeast are eating the sugar and shitting carbon dioxide, they piss alcohol and they shit carbon dioxide, farting, you're collecting their farts and you're using that energy, that gas, to drive what, pistons or paddles that allow you to mix
actually,
the...
It's a matter of, you know, imagine when you fill up your vat and you close it, you have the skins which are floating on top, and it's our problem. We need to continuously wet the skins, and so normally doing with a pump,
to
with
avoid
an engine that aerates on top. No, there we are just, when it pressurizes, there are the little bulbs of CO2 that are farted are in the middle of the wine, because they're kept there. When you open on the top like a Coca-Cola can, all the bulbs will go up top and we'll bring the wine with it. So this is the first big effect. Then the second is that we have a double layer vat. We collect some of the fart in the lower vat, and we, with pipes and valves, we can get the pressure going from the down vat up,
from the
create
lower
a wave, and again it will completely reverse the cap of skins, and so again it will create, for example, the same function as a punch down or a delestage.
So texturally, your red wines are very, very interesting, and I'm convinced that it's because of the way you vinify, and I'm also convinced that a lot of critics, well, not a lot, but some people don't always get your wines, they don't always understand your wines, because they have a very different shape in the mouth and a very different texture in the mouth to, say, I don't want to be rude, but a conventional wine made in a conventional way. I don't mean that in a pejorative sense. Would you say that? Do you think that's the case?
Well, I think that in the soup, I recognize some of the ingredients of the soup, which, for example, let's add the sulfite, because we are strongly still believing and fighting to make research around sulfite with the obvious line to make completely sulfite-free wine, and this is a story, but in general, we don't use sulfite in fermentation for all wines. Then, of course, so even the Nobile, the Sacco, the Cruz, the Reserva, no sulfur in fermentation means a start which is very, there is a buzz, very large in the fruit, and very, you know, the yeast work...
slowly, initially.
Yeah. But create in some way
mouth, is it more richness?
Exactly.
Is that from glycerol,
I think that there is dimension in the mouth.
Are they allowed to produce extra glycerol to give that kind of slightly wider mouth feel, because they're not being stressed all the time, they're really working according to their own pace? Would you get on with that?
I think that they're not stressed, it's a good point, even though they are bothered sometimes by some bacteria that are not going to be completely taken away from the sulfite. But we have to combine this with the fact that they work very well under pressure with the fermenters. They work very well because we cultivate the yeast of each vat. Every vat we cultivate is own yeast, so to try to help the better yeast to predominate.
So what you mean by that is each tank has its own. You let the
actually
yeast...
in the 38 hours while I make some cold maceration, I take off 5% of the juice and cultivate its own yeast there with just heat. Heat it and make it ferment more in a better condition.
So you take a little sample.
So this 5% becomes a booster for the batch. But every single batch has its own, not something that we use for everybody. This I think is very interesting.
So if I was a natural wine Taliban, which I'm not, I would say, oh, you can't. As happened to me, I had I sent one of my natural wines into a wine fair and they didn't like that kind of behavior. Justify why you're using grown-up, clever science to make better wine, and why should people who criticize you for doing that accept what you're doing? Because all you're doing is you're using the vineyard yeast, right? You're just making sure that the vineyard yeast in that particular vat are healthy, and they're not going to give you a really vinegary wine. You're just analyzing it and helping them grow in the early stages and then putting them back in the tank. Yeah, is that right?
Exactly.
What would you say if I said you shouldn't do that?
I would say, did grape want it to become wine?
Yeah, exactly. Did grapes want to become wine? All right. Okay. Tell me about the no added sulfite wines as well. Because again, your no added sulfite wines, as a category, I think everyone agrees that when they're good, they're fantastic, they're brilliant, they're amazing. And when they're not, they're absolutely undrinkable. They can be. And then, of course, you have wines in the middle that have tolerable faults, should we say, which are still very enjoyable wines. Where do you stand on what is your driving rationale for making a no added sulfite wine? Why make life hard for yourself? Why make life hard for yourself in the market and in the winery? Why just sling some sulfites in and sleep easy at night?
First of all, I stand in the I started this project with the idea I want to do something different. I want to do a different taste. I want to look if there is a different taste, because otherwise the effort is useless. Because if it's just a matter of taking away this dust of sulfur, it's not even a problem, an environmental problem, an healthy problem, if you use them correctly. But of course, taking off is always also nice for a guy which is so rationalizing as I am. But first of all, the second point is I wanted to make it become as much as possible a conventional approach, in the sense of reliability of the wine, if it needs to travel, if it needs to be stored, etc. But also in general to be reliable as a taste, you know. Conventional means for us today means clean,
fruity,
net, you know, etc. And so on. Well, I can say that I partially have reached both of these targets, because the wine is mostly reliable, even though it's not yet completely, how can I say, dominated. You cannot completely dominate the sulfur.
It still has a bit of its own freedom.
There is a freedom, and maybe we will, by continuing this research and these attempts, we will find ways to make it become more controllable and more addressable in some way. You
know, to minimize the risks.
To minimize the risk of what? Of a little volatile that goes up, of some kind of small oxidation, of a reduction sometimes, of etc. etc. So, aspects which, I must be honest, as the winemaking I have always expressed, I should call these defaults. Today, I'm calling them nuances of new tasties that, combined with the great vibration that sulfur-free wines have, because they have this buzz. What I was telling at the beginning, from what happens is that there is a bacteriological buzz happening in the sulfur-free wine. So for the other wines, that is what I wanted to mention. They have it at the beginning, then I have to control it because I put them in wood, because I also don't want to. I want to address them more. On the sulfur-free, you have this buzz which continues even in the bottle, and you feel it. You know, I like to call this new dimension of sulfur-free wines is the not the back taste, the back sound. When you have it on your palate, you know, typically you have the back taste coming up. Well, you have some noise coming to your ears, and you feel this damn bacteriological life, which is also giving sometimes thickness. Sometimes it's in some way also tickling your palate, and also it's creating aromatics which are new. Especially, let's underline these two, in difficult vintage, because in the top vintages, example, I started in 2012 bottling such wines. In 2012, 13, 15, the wines are much closer to conventional taste.
Even though they're quite natural.
Exactly. In 14, 16, 17, I would say also, because we where there are problems, even if they are minimal, you have much less instruments to defend from this problem. It is undeniable. But I'm seeing an evolution also in the market. There are still a lot of people who make a face on these wines, but
they don't like them.
They don't like them, mm-hmm. Especially on the trade. But more and more and more we see people understanding that they have a character, they have a personality, and that maybe there is something in these nuances of that I mentioned before that is even attractive, and it's coming along. Well, first of all, consumers are ready; they love it. Consumers mostly love it. So in general, especially because they love the store, the story is exciting. Then when they get to the wine, they even feel there is something, and so it's even better.
Yeah, but texturally, these wines are very different, irrespective even of flavor. Texturally, they're very different.
Yeah, this is the.
But what about the boring old curmudgeon journalist people that are really kind of divided on the taste? I think everyone applauds you or people like you, the sort of environmental aspect, but you know, as a biodynamic guy, you know, the results count. You can talk and play around with the moon, lunar cycles, all that kind of crap, but you've got to deliver, haven't you? How do you sort of convince or educate maybe more people in the wine trade and the media of the merits of what you are doing?
Well, it's tough. In the last years, I got to the point in which I abandoned almost trying to convince anyone. And I even often don't send them out for tastings, just to be clear. Mm-hmm. And because very rarely people stopped and really thought. There has been examples. There has been cases in which some even very mainstream, let's say, magazines or guides have stopped, thought about it and gave a very frank and interesting critic on them, and sometimes positive, sometimes but very, very
constructive.
Constructive. And we had also some positive ones. But at some point I stopped. Today I think that we can try again, because I think that that the media is also understanding that there is an opportunity of culture there too.
Yeah, there's a chance to change, isn't there? There's a chance to look at wine, to make it live up to its billing.
At least to add something. And, you know, we work for this, for the curiosity of a new information, of a new aspect, a new story. And so I think it's a new time. And by the way, I was surprised about the interest internationally. Also, in the last months, I've been traveling a bit, and it's really coming along everywhere now, this expectation on these wines.
So I just want to say thanks to Michele Maleni for coming in today and talking about Salchetto. Anybody who's listening and who wants to know more about Tuscany and who wants to know more about cutting edge winemaking, this winery, Salchetto, should be your first stop. You will never see a winery anywhere in the world that is like this. And the approach that Michele and his team are doing is absolutely new. You know, whether you like the wines or not, whether you think they're consistent in every vintage, I'm not really interested. I mean, they're not always consistent in every vintage. But in terms of texture, and you look at what's going on in the vineyard, you look at what's going on in the winery and how it's actually done, you won't understand it until you actually go there. I insist that you do. And you get in that winery and you feel the light change on your head when you're, I don't know, 10 meters below ground. That is when you're finally going to understand why light is important in outside, why light is important inside, and why if you're the wine that you're drinking shows an inner brightness in terms of its light, its inner light, then you will finally understand what's going on. So it's a big learning curve. Must visit this wine. You can have a really nice lunch, very light as well, which is because it goes with your philosophy.
From our garden. So Michele, thank you, Monty. So, I'm flattered.
Yeah, so let's discuss the contract when I become your PR manager. We'll do that on Monday, shall we?
Exactly.
Yeah, all
Monday
right,
morning.
Great, okay. I've got a Swiss bank account. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
It's already there.
Great. Thanks a lot. That's
thanks,
cool.
Monty.
Thanks, Michele. It was a great one. Thanks.
Follow Italian Wine Podcast on Facebook and Instagram.